This is Brahma Stuti, verse 11, Lord Brahma's glorification of Krishna. Kvaham tamo maharaham kakaragni varbhu samveshitandagata saptavitastikaya kve drigvidav vidavigani Tanda Paranacharya Vitadvaroma Vivarasya Chate Mahitvam. Brahma prayed to Lord Krishna in Vrindavan, "What am I, a small creature measuring seven spans of my own hand? I am enclosed in a pot-like universe composed of material nature. The total material energy, false ego, ether, air, water, and earth. And what is your glory, my dear Lord Purushottam Sri Krishna? Unlimited universes pass through the pores of your body, just as particles of dust pass through the openings of a screened window." Srila Prabhupada explains in Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 572, purport. After stealing all of Krishna's cows and cowherd boys, Brahma returned and saw that the cows and boys were still roaming with Krishna. Then he offered this prayer in his defeat. A conditioned soul, even one so great as Brahma, who manages the affairs of the entire universe, cannot compare to the personality of Godhead. For Krishna can produce numberless universes simply by the spiritual rays emanating from the pores of Krishna's body. Material scientists should take lessons from the utterance of Sri Brahma regarding our insignificance in comparison with God. In these prayers of Brahma, there is much to learn for those who are falsely puffed up by the accumulation of power. In Prabhupada's purport, Radharani, he's explaining that Brahma is saying, "I'm a small creature, and compared to you, unlimited universes pass through the pores of your body." It's quite a comparison here. Because Brahma is the Lord of one universe, and he thinks that's a big thing. That's a universe. We can't reach the end of the universe if we get in a spaceship and travel for 1,000 light years or 100,000 light years. We can't reach the end of this one universe. And Brahma is realizing that this little 5-year-old boy, unlimited numbers of such vast, unlimited universes are emanating from each little pore in the body of Krishna. From Krishna's little baby, little childhood forearm, millions of universes are emanating as particles of light come through the screen on a summer day through the screen of our window. Little light particles from the sun dancing. This profound realization of one's own insignificance. In other words, you're so big and I'm so small. I thought I was big until I saw how big Krishna was. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he explains in his Tika on this verse 11. Rama said, "Krishna, you create universes, you're not proud like me." I didn't even create the pradhan or the mahatattva or the elements. I simply combined them in different ways and manifested this universe with intelligence given to me by Krishna. Because actually I was in ignorance until Krishna gave me knowledge. I was groping in the darkness, literally groping in the darkness, trying to understand how to create. I understood something that I'm supposed to create. That was in my chitta, but how and when? I was searching for the means and the ways to do it. So all the means and the ways was given to me by Vishnu or Krishna himself. So I'm just quite dependent in my small act of creation. And even after performing that act of creation, I became proud and thought I could challenge the Supreme Creator. Thought that my creative ability and powers are far greater than this little boy standing before me in Vrindavan with some yogurt and rice in his hand. And Krishna creates millions of universes from the pores of his body, but he's Trinada Pisunicha, you know. He's not proud. Although you actually create the universe, you're not proud in comparison with that. What powers do I have to be proud of? Your universal form is surrounded by Prakriti, Mahatattva, and Ahankar, ether, air, fire, water, and earth. All the planets from Patala Loka in the bottom to Satya Loka at the top are situated within the universal form of yours. In that expanse, where am I, measuring only seven spans of my own hand? Countless universes pass through the pores of your skin, just as particles of dust pass through the holes of a window screen. Who can possibly measure your greatness, my dear Lord Krishna? Here, Brahma equates Mahavishnu, the creator of the Mahatattva, with Krishna, and shows that in comparison to Krishna, he is like a bird compared to Garuda. So even Mahavishnu is nothing compared to Krishna. See what Prabhupada's purport is on this verse. It's a continuation of Brahma's revelations of his finitude in relation to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada says in his commentary on Krishna book, verse 11, Lord Brahma realized his actual position. Brahma is certainly the supreme teacher of this universe. He's in charge of the production of material nature consisting of complete material elements, false ego, sky, air, fire, water, and earth. Such a universe may be gigantic, but it can be measured, just as we measure our body as seven cubits. Generally, everyone's personal bodily measurement is calculated to be seven cubits of his hand. Promises this particular universe may appear very gigantic body, but it's nothing but the measurement of seven cubits for Lord Brahma. Aside from this universe, there are limited universes which are just outside the jurisdiction of this particular Lord Brahma. Just as innumerable atomic infinitesimal fragments pass through the holes of a screened window, so millions and trillions of universes in their seedling form are coming from the bodily pores of Mahavishnu. And that Mahavishnu is but a part of the plenary expansion of Krishna. So you can see the Prabhupada's including Vishnu's commentary here, that Vishnu brings it in it. In this verse, actually, Brahma is he's mentioning about the aspect of Mahavishnu, because Mahavishnu is the one all the universes are coming out of. Then he enters into each one as his expansion, as Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And Garbhadakshay Vishnu expands into all the elements, Shirdakshay Vishnu. And that's just that Mahavishnu was just a plenary expansion of Krishna. Prabhupada's purport. Under these circumstances, although Brahma is the supreme creature within the universe, what is his importance in the presence of Krishna? It's like somebody might say, oh, you know, I have 1 lakh of rupees, oh, that's nice. Then they meet Bill Gates, and he says, I have 10 million lakhs of rupees. Okay, you're pretty rich. Forget about my, yeah, your 1 lakh is like a penny. You're really proud because in the village where you come from, nobody has more than 10 rupees. You're the zamindar. Zamin means land, and dar means holder. Murli dar. You hold all the land, so you're a big guy. I heard on a tape, Prabhupada said that Haranya and Govardhan Maju Madar, they were the father and uncle of Raghunath Das Goswami, and 500 years ago they were collecting 20 lakhs a month taxes. It's a lot of money. It says a month for the emperor, the Muslim emperor, and they're giving 8 lakhs and keeping 12. 12 lakhs a month. I mean, they had a lot of money. Big time. So this, not a whole lot of things said there in this verse other than it's something for us to humble ourselves before the... These are the sections, the transcendental qualities of Krishna cannot be counted. Krishna's transcendental qualities cannot be counted. So Brahma's helping us understanding. As he is understanding the identity of Krishna, he's helping us understand who he is also. This is called Sambandha Gyan. He's getting a lesson in Sambandha Gyan. Of course, he's in the Leela. He's a Parishad. He's directly expanded from the body of the Lord. Well, so are we. We're also expanded from the body of the Lord. We have no other origin than Vishnu, Mahavishnu. But this is his class, the School of Hard Knocks. He's learning Sambandha Gyan. He's learning the identity. Who is Krishna and who am I? Isn't it? He thought he's a big guy in this universe, the biggest. Didn't think Krishna was so big. Just some little silly kid in Vrindavan. Can't be God. Not possible. And we are the same way. We're a big guy in our village, or a big guy in our country, or a big guy in our head. The country of our head, or the universe of our head. We think we're big. We're number one. We're the center. And we can't imagine this little child playing in Vrindavan, this Shishu Kumar Krishna, that he's God. He's actually the Supreme Lord. That's a fact, he is. And as Lord Brahma step by step is realizing the length and breadth and extent of Krishna's greatness and omnipotence, then he's sharing his experiences and his learning, the points he's learning. I learned, listen everybody, show and tell. Like they have in grammar school, you learn something, then you show the students and tell about it. So we're students, we're in this Brahma Sampradaya, we're Vaishnavas, and we're also worshipping Krishna. Brahma's worshipping Krishna. And he's teaching us, his students in this parampara, students of the students of the students. So here we're getting it straight from the horse's mouth. This is Sakshat Shiksha. It's not coming from Brahma to his son, not his son, the Kumaras, and then finally Narada and Vyasadeva, and like this coming down. The direct words we're hearing here are the direct words of Brahma, that he's speaking these verses. And they're recorded in the pages of the 14th chapter of the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. Brahma, Professor Brahma in the BIHE, Brahma's Institute of Higher Education, is teaching us and teaching all the readers of the Bhagavad Puran and all the people that are studying Brahma Stuti in chapter 14. This is the teacher. The teacher learned from a teacher. Any good teacher, every teacher has a teacher. No one comes out of the womb with a PhD. I never heard. Even Einstein studied a few books and had a few teachers. He didn't just wake up when they say, "No, I discovered the theory of relativity." I was playing with my trucks one day in the mud, and I said, "Oh yes, E equals MC squared, energy equals mass over speed, or whatever." So this was the end result of much study and introspection and association with great teachers and scientists that he became. Like this. So Brahma attended the KIHE, Krishna Institute of Higher Education. This is actually the first school that was started, and the science of God consciousness was first propagated. This is the first institute, first technology institute in the universe, KIHE, Krishna Institute of Higher Education. And then Brahma, after getting a degree, first he got a degree in humiliation. He got thoroughly humiliated because of his false pride and foolish nature. So after he got his got his degree in humiliation, then he went on for his PhD in theology and ontology. And he studied with some of the best professors in the whole world. He studied with God. The dean of the school, Krishna Institute of Higher Education. So Krishna taught him directly through Leela and through experience. Some people learn by hearing, some people learn by seeing, seeing and experiencing. And some people read. Hearing means reading. By reading and hearing you can learn, or by seeing and experience. And there's a third class of people that hear and see and even read, but they never learn. And that's probably most of us in Kali Yuga. We experience and we see and we read and we hear and we're still stupid. We still make the same mistakes and do the same ridiculous things over and over again. Brahma went to the school in Vrindavan, Krishna Institute of Higher Education. He learned so many things, and now he's speaking them in beautiful poetry and different types of chandas and meter and melody. And his prayers, these are the outpouring of his heart. They're full of revelations, they're full of devotion, they're full of transcendental knowledge, they're full of sambandha gyan, and they're full of purification, and they're full of mercy. And by studying these prayers, we can acquire all of those attributes of education and knowledge and mercy and purification. Brahma Stuti. These prayers are full of devotion because these are prayers coming directly from the heart of Brahma after he had realizations. By entering the Leela, he took direct part in the Leela, albeit in a rather unusual, a little bit vikalpa way. Pratikul way, unfavorable way, but the net result was good. Because there's anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam, accept things that are favorable for Krishna's pleasure and reject things that are unfavorable. This is a symptom of surrender. So in this particular Leela, ostensibly didn't give pleasure to Krishna because it upset his Leela with his coward boys, which is certainly far superior to any kind of shanta rasa he's having with Brahma. Or some touches of Dasya Ras, it's kind of negative service. It's disservice. Sakya Ras is a very high flavor. This is not the Sakya Ras of Vaikuntha with Arjuna, which is Gaurava. Gaurava Sakya Ras. This is Vishramba. Vishramba Sakya Ras and Gaurava. Gaurava is that Sakya Ras of Arjuna and Vaikuntha, or in Kurukshetra, or in Dwarka. It's full of this. Lots of touches of awe and respect and reverence and some distance. Yes, they sleep together. Yes, they eat together. But we never hear that Arjuna takes a rascal out of Krishna's mouth. And we never hear that Krishna we hear that Krishna drove his chariot as a sarathi. But we don't hear that Krishna himself acted as a chariot and Arjuna got on his shoulders. But with Subal, Krishna is also the sarathi. He's the carrier. But he uses his body to drive him. And he acts like the horse. Krishna becomes the horse and the chariot and the reins and everything. And then Subal sits on his shoulder, then kicks him in the ribs with his ankles and says, turn right, turn left. And Krishna goes, oh, don't kick so hard, Subal. Because Subal is sitting on Krishna's shoulders, obviously with his legs draped across his chest and his ankles lined up in Krishna's ribs. So when Subal wants to, when they're having chicken fights in the Yamuna with the other coward boys, or playing whatever they're playing here and there in the valleys and forests, then Subal will gently, maybe even harder, kick his heel into Krishna's right ribs. That means turn right, turn left. Because sometimes when the coward boys are playing water fights in the Yamuna, the coward boy on the shoulders of Krishna has to hold on. So he puts his hands across Krishna's eyes. He goes like this. He's holding on to Krishna's forehead and fighting with the other boys with one hand. I don't know if you've ever played water fights like this. You can also use two hands, but then the guy that's holding has to be really strong too. But sometimes you lose your balance, you put your hand on the other guy's head. So this is what they're doing. So this is Vishramba. There's There's such intimacy that you can take the food from the other person's mouth, or sometimes even the Priyanarma Sakus, they climb in the bed with Krishna and Nikunj, and they're in the flower bed, Subal, or some of the most intimate boys. But I don't think you'll ever read any account of, although you read accounts where Arjuna said, "Oh, please forgive me, Krishna." I mean, Arjuna became fearful. There's no question of becoming afraid of Krishna and Vishramba Sakiras. But in Gaurava Sakiras, that's the very point. There's a touch of fear, there's a touch of respect, and there's a sense of equalization or equalness with this Gaurava Sakiras, that we're equals, we're friends, we eat together, we sleep together. But at the same time, you know in the back of your mind that actually he's God. But he's so kind to me, he's letting me be his friend, Arjuna is thinking. But Subal and Sridham and the coward boys, they never think, oh, he's so nice. They think, we're so nice, we're letting him be our friend. And sometimes they tell Krishna, listen, if you're not nice, we're not going to play with you tomorrow. And what is this? You threw my ball in the Yamuna, and now it's too cold, I don't want to jump in and get it. If you don't go in and get my ball, I'm going home, we're not going to play with you anymore. No, Subal, don't leave me. And then Krishna jumps in that freezing cold water in the middle of the winter, and he goes down from Kaliyagat and he ends up at Prashkanandagat, and he climbs up to the top of Dwadasa Aditya Hill, and the 12 Adityas, the 12 sons of Aditi, which are the 12 sun planets. Aditya also means sun. Aditya is a name for the sun. 12 sun planets come from all directions and warm up Krishna, so he gets warmed up. Then he starts getting so warmed up, he starts perspiring like a Swedish sauna bath. And all the perspiration runs down the Dwadasa Aditya Tila. Tila means hill. That's where the Madan Mohan temple is. And it clicks on the bottom just beside the river Yamuna. It makes a beautiful lagoon there called Prashkananda. Prashkananda, which is a ghat also in the Yamuna. And then Krishna, of course, retrieved the ball and he got accepted again with the coward voice. And they said, all right, should we let him come back and play? All right. He was begging, he had tears in his eyes. So Subal and Sridham, they said, all right, we should accept him. So this kind of intimacy, not only you think you're equal to Krishna, but you think you're better than Krishna, you're bigger than Krishna. What is this? Krishna lived to go over down the hill. This is all boasting. This is like some political party that does all boasting and ends up doing nothing. We'll do this and we'll do that, and you elect them, they do nothing. So Krishna's saying, I lived to go over down the hill. Hey, coward boys, did you hear this? In front of the gopis, he's saying, Giridhari, he lived to go over. Everyone knows that we held our sticks up there, and as soon as we took our sticks down, his arms started wobbling. So they have this feeling. Brahma's teaching us, we're learning a lot about Krishna, and as Brahma's feeling really proud of, he's proud of his, they have an expression that, in English, a pauper is proud of his penny. A pauper means a poor person. The penny means like a rupee or a ruble. At any rate, we're students of the Bhagavatam, we're students of Brahma, and he's had these wonderful revelations. And I say, and so we hear this, and we think, wow, because he's seeing it. He's seeing these Vishnu forms and all the Mahavishnus, Krishna, the little coward boy, all these four-armed Vishnu forms are expanding from him. And he's realizing that millions of universes arise from the pores of one fragment or one plenary portion of Krishna. Krishna expands into Balaram, Balaram expands into Mulshankarshan, the Chaturvyuha, expanded the Mahavishnu and Mahavishnu Garbhadakshaya and Shirdakshaya Vishnu, and the head of it all, the origin of it all, is Krishna, Adi Purusham, Govindam Adi Purusham. Now, text 12. Akshepanam Garbhakatasya Padahyo Kim Kalpate Matur Hoksha Jagase Kimasti Nasti Vyapadesha Bhushitam Vavasti Kukshe Kiyadapyananta. O Lord Adhokshaja, does a mother take offense when the child within her womb kicks with his legs? Is there anything in existence, whether designated by various philosophers as real or as unreal, that is actually outside your abdomen? So this is interesting. The progression of prayers here, because the previous one said, he uses this word, Andagata. Andagata means pot-like universe. So here he's speaking in a rather just a general way, comparing the universe to a big pot. That's a pot is not conscious, does not have any consciousness in a pot. There's no personality in a pot, a clay pot, or a brass pot. It's Andagata. He said, I am just a small creature and I'm in this pot-like universe, this total material energy. And you, and here I am, I'm in this universe, which is just like a big enclosed pot, and I'm stuck in this pot-like universe. I'm stuck in this inside this one pot called the universe. And where are you? You're out, way outside, beyond all of this. You're the actual origin of this one pot-like universe which I am encapsulated and enclosed in. And not only that, what is your glories? There are unlimited pot-like universes, unlimited globes, because it says Andagata. Anda means egg-shaped. The universes, as you know, are not round, they're kind of oblong, like an egg. So Anda means egg. Andagata, the pot-like, or the they just translate it, Anda, like we say, Jagadananda, Jaganda, Jagadanda, Jaganda. Anda means, Jagad means universe, and Anda means egg-like. So the universe is egg-like in shape. So this pot-like or egg-shaped universe, roundish universe, there are millions of such pot-like universes emanating from just the pores of a planetary expansion. Apparently, when Brahma uttered this prayer, Krishna was busy eating his yogurt, rice, and pickles, and leaning on his cowherding stick, and not really paying much attention. So then, if you look at the progression and try to think, well, why did he change his tune, so to speak? We can ask this question. Because in the next verse, he made it a little more personal. He said, well, listen, because that didn't work so much. It appears that he mentioned this verse, that Krishna, thousands and millions of pot-like universes emanate from the pores of your body, and you're so great, and I'm so tiny, I'm stuck inside one of those pots, yelling out, and you can't even hear me, help, help. Like a little boy trapped in a well. If some boy is trapped in a well in the middle of a field of 100 acres, and it's a dried water well, and it's surrounded by high grass and trees, he can yell his head off, and no one's going to hear him. Or the sound will be absorbed in the ground and the brick walls of the well. So Brahma is crying in the wilderness, so to speak, within his pot-like universe. And even though he's standing before Krishna with folded hands offering his stutis, it doesn't appear that Krishna is being moved, not too much interested. He says, hey, wait a minute, listen, let me change it. Forget about this pot-like universe. This pot-like universe is your belly. And you're a mother, and you're pregnant. And I'm your kid. So be nice to me. And seeing if that gets some kind of response. So he says, oh, Adhotsuja, does a mother take offense? In other words, please, because Krishna's not saying, I forgive you. Krishna has a very grave look on his face. Listen, you upset me. You took all my boys and cows for 1 year. For 1 year I had to be without my boys. For you, it was a few moments. For me, it was for 1 year, buddy. And I don't like it. It's not something I'm going to easily forget. He says, oh, listen, I mean, think of it like this. You're a mother. Mother means the creator. You create all these universes. So I'm in the pot of this universe. And you're the mother, so I'm in the pot of your belly. So first he talked about pot-like universe, now the pregnant woman is like a pot-like belly. It says, Garbha, I'm just like a child. Okay, I made an offense, but just think of me as your child, and you're my mother, and I'm your child, and I'm inside the pot-like belly of your pregnant womb, Garbha. So I give you a few kicks. Are you going to reach inside and pull out the baby and throw him on the floor? He'll tolerate and forgive him. Does a mother take offense when a child within her womb kicks his legs? Is there anything in existence that is actually outside your abdomen? In the Krishna book, chapter 14, Prabhupada says, Lord Brahma compared himself to a little child within the womb of his mother. As a child within the womb plays with his hands and legs, and while playing touches the body of the mother. Is the mother offended with the child? Of course she isn't. Similarly, Brahma may be a very great personality, and yet not only Brahma, but everything that exists is within the womb of Krishna. Krishna's energy is all-pervading. There is no place in their creation where it is not acting. Krishna's energy is not acting. Everything is existing within the energy of Krishna. So the Brahma of this universe, or the Brahmas of many other millions of trillions of universes, are existing within the energy of Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is considered to be the mother, and everything existing within the womb of the mother is considered to be the child. And the good mother is never offended with the child, even if he touches the body of the mother by kicking his legs. So, seems that Brahma is appealing to Krishna to be a good mother and overlook the misbehavior of her wayward son named Brahma. Vishnu Chakravarti says, Brahma equates, oh, this is interesting. Very interesting. There's a first, and the other verse, it was talking about millions of universes that are coming through your pores, just like particles of dust are dancing in the particles of dust are dancing in the rays of the sun rays coming, filtering through the screened window. Each of those particles of dust in that sun ray is like a universe. So that's Mahavishnu, because so many universes emanate from his pores. Now, because Brahma's in this verse, he's using the word ukshepanam, which means keeping garbhagatasipadaya. Garbhagata means that the child in the womb, garbha means womb. Then Vishnu is saying the last verse, previous verse is Mahavishnu, this is about Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Because first Mahavishnu, all the universes expand, and then he enters into all those universes, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is actually the father and the mother, whatever, of Brahma. So Vishnu is saying, Brahma here in this verse 12, he's equating Krishna with Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, saying, as you are the mother to the universe, you are also the mother to me. Therefore, you should forgive my offenses because I'm your son. When the child in the womb kicks the mother does not take offense. Whether philosophers prove that the universe is true or false, the fact is that it exists within your belly. I am also within you, just like your son. The conclusion is you should therefore forgive my offense. That's what I was saying. It's like he's appealing to his sentiments now. And Krishna does the same thing as Brahma is doing with him. Krishna does the same thing in Bhagavad Gita. He appeals to the sentiments of Arjuna as he tries to elicit his fighting spirit by using different... He calls him a Pritu, Parta, the son of Pritu, Partha, the son of Pandu. Then he reminds him of his illustrious dynasty. You're the holder of the Gandiva, you're the son of Pandu, you're a Panch Pandava, you're a great Kshatriya. What will people think? For one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. How can you leave the battlefield? In so many ways he tries to remind him of his chivalrous identity and his illustrious dynasty, so that Krishna is trying to emote the fighting spirit in Arjuna, so he picks up his fallen Gandiva and starts fighting for the cause of religion and to remove a dharma created by Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra and company. So Brahma is using a similar idea that, please, I tried glorifying you as Mahavishnu, you didn't seem too impressed. Now I'm getting a little more localized and saying, but gee, in your form is Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, we're more related here. Because Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is in one universe, and I'm in one of those universes I'm in with you. I'm in there with you, in fact, I'm within you. I'm in there with you. We're in there together, buddy. Let's go together. I'm not only in the universe, but I'm inside you in the universe. I'm in your belly. I'm Garbha. And so please, like a mother, forgive me. So now we can go to text 13. Text 13. Chagatrayanto dadi samplavode darayanasyo daranavinalat vinayagato jastwiti van nave msha kintvishvaratvan navinirgatosmi. Well, this is translation. Oh, my dear Lord Krishna, Purushottam Sri Krishna, when the three planetary systems are merged into the water at the time of dissolution, your plenary portion, Narayan, lies down on the water. Gradually, a lotus flower grows from his navel, and Brahma takes birth upon that lotus flower. Certainly, these words are not false. Thus, am I not born from you? Purport. Although every living being is a child of God, Lord Brahma here makes a special claim because he takes birth on a lotus flower that emanates from the navel of Narayan, the personality of Godhead. Ultimately, all living beings are equally expansions of the transcendental body of the Supreme Lord. But Brahma has an intimate relationship with the Lord because of the activities of universal creation. So he's begging the Lord for special mercy. Lord Brahma is not born from any mother, so he's called Aja, without birth, but rather emanates directly from the body of the Lord. Prabhupada states in Krishna book, it is naturally concluded that the mother of Brahma is Narayan and the father and everybody. On these grounds, Lord Brahma is requesting special forgiveness for his offenses. So we may try that one out also. When we as devotees make offenses, we can say, gee, Krishna, remember Brahma? He did some stupid things and foolish things. And he folded his hands and came before you and said, listen, you're Mahavishnu and you're Garbhadakshaya Vishnu and you're my mother and you're my father and I'm in your universe and I'm part of you and you created me and you're so great and I'm so small and you're Vibhu and I'm Anu. Please forgive me. So we can try the same tactic, the same line of thought or prayers or action. When we make a transgression or offense in our practice of devotional service, and use the same idea. So, oh Krishna, am I not a child? Am I not residing within your universe? Are you not the origin of my very existence? Am I not a child of Mahavishnu? The glance. Please be kind to me. Please overlook my offenses and my transgressions, just like a mother overlooks the offenses of her child. Vishnu Chakravarti says, the son also comes out of the womb eventually. Brahma states, it is at the time of dissolution, the three planetary systems are merged into the water. Gradually, a lotus flower grows from the navel of Garbhadakshayi Vishnu. And Brahma appears upon that lotus flower. Others may or may not come from you, but certainly I am born from you. So Brahma is saying, I don't know about anybody else, but I can say it for myself. So in this verse 13, Prabhupada says, Lord Brahma admits that his birth was from the lotus flower which blossomed from the navel of Narayan after the dissolution of the three worlds or three planetary systems known as Bhur, Bhuva, Bhuvarloka, and Swarloka. The universe is divided into three divisions, namely Swarga, Martya, and Patala. The Swarga Loka is above us and Patala is below us and Martya Loka or Mrityu Loka is our very special place. Death, the planet of death. These three planetary systems are merged into the water at the time of dissolution. That's a short comment, purport, little commentary. Now text 14. Narayanastvam nahi sarvadehinam atmasya diksha kila loka shakshi Narayanangam Narabhujalayanat Tachchapi Satyam Nataveva Maya. Brahma continues, as you are not the original Narayan, O Supreme Controller, since you are the soul of every embodied being and the eternal witness of all created realms, indeed, Lord Narayan is your expansion, and he is called Narayan because he is a generating source of the primeval water of the universe. He is real, not a product of your illusory maya. Narayan, that person who lies in the water. Prabhupada says in Adi Lila 2:30 commentary, Brahma spoke these prayers to Krishna after Krishna defeated him by displaying his mystic powers. Brahma tried his best to test Krishna to see if he's really the Supreme Personality of Godhead playing as a coward boy. Brahma stole all the other boys and their calves from the pasturing grounds. But when Brahma returned to the pastures, he saw that all the boys and cows were still there, for Krishna had created them all again. When Brahma saw this mystic power of Lord Krishna, he admitted defeat and offered prayers to the Lord, addressing Krishna as the proprietor and seer of everything in the creation, and as the super soul who is within each and every living entity and is dear to all. Lord Krishna is Narayan, the father of Brahma. He is Lord Krishna's plenary expansion, Garbha Dakshayi Vishnu. After placing himself in the Garbha ocean, created Brahma from his own body. Mahavishnu in the causal ocean and Shirodakshayi Vishnu, the super soul in everyone's heart, are all transcendental expansions of the Supreme Truth. Sanatana Goswami says that the expansions of Narayan are incarnations from the original form of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. The essence is, means the bottom line, although Brahma was born from Lord Narayan, Brahma now understands that Narayan is himself a mere expansion of the original personality, Lord Sri Krishna. So here in these verses, Brahma is starting to reveal the difference between himself, Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and Lord Shiva. So far we've heard the difference between Brahma and Vishnu. That's what we're hearing now. Because this is the eighth and ninth point. Lord Brahma glorifies the inconceivable opulence of Lord Krishna, the Achintya Vibhuti. That we've heard already in these last couple of verses. Vishnu Chakravarti says in 14, yes. He says, anticipating, because this is what I like about Vishnu Chakravarti, he brings you right into the, like it's like a, he's like Sanjay in the Bhagavad Gita, Sanjay at Transcendental Television. You could see what's going on and tell Dhritarashtra, although they were somewhat distant from the battlefield, maybe a long distance, I don't know exactly. There's different ideas about that. But he was narrating events that hadn't even happened yet, as you could see the future. Pretty good TV show. Telling you the news, the news show telling you what's going to happen before that happens. Sometimes they have eyewitness news. They're right there on the scene, showing you the trade centers burning down, giving commentary, but they can't tell you a week beforehand, here's the news. But Sanjay was telling what was happening before it even happened, that Krishna Arjuna would be victorious in the battle and his son would lose. And Vishwanath is able to enter into these leelas by his samadhi, because the leelas are nitya, eternally going on in Bhauma Vrindavan and some other universe. So by the power of pure devotion and the wings of his prema, he enters the leela. It's called leela privation. He's almost standing there and watching Krishna's face and watching Brahma's face and hearing what Brahma says. And we don't hear Krishna saying too much. These are 40 prayers that are rolling on. We don't hear that. And Krishna said in reply, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Because many places in the Bhagavatam there's dialogue. Arjuna Vacha, even Gita, Arjuna Vacha, Krishna Vacha, questions, answers. But here, Krishna is there, but we don't see his presence. We feel, well, where's Krishna? Is this a monologue? Is this a soliloquy? It's called a soliloquy, where you stand in the corner of the stage and the spotlight is on you. Oh, this or that, and you're just speaking out into the sky, and there's no one around you, speaking your mind or heart. So is Brahma just standing somewhere under a banyan tree in Vrindavan? Oh, Krishna, you're Garvadaksha Vishnu, you're Mahavishnu, you're the source of all powers, I'm insignificant. No, he's standing right, and Krishna's right there. But he's so quiet, we've already gone 14 verses, and we don't hear any reply. So Krishna's replying by his body language. Krishna's not a statue, he's not a standard. For 40 verses, he's leaning this way, that way. He's human, Naralila. He's smiling, or he's laughing, or he's frowning, or he's looking disinterested or bored, or maybe he even starts talking to a coward friend, or cracks a joke, or eats a few fruits, or sits down. And this is Brahma's moment of truth. This is Brahma's on the witness stand. You know, the judge can do whatever he wants, but why the lawyer is stating the defendant's case, or the plaintiff is defending himself, the judge can drink some, bring some juice or put on his headphones and listen to some music or whatever. No one's going to say whatever the judge, that he may not be so attentive while his lawyers are rabbling on and say, Your Honor, this happened and then that, you have to think of this. Your Honor's like, the judge is like, okay, are you done now? Okay, guilty. Because oftentimes the judge makes his decision within the first couple of minutes. It's explained that when, and this often happens even in modern day, with these lawyers, because they have to earn their money, so if the case is over in 1 minute, then the defendant or the plaintiff will feel they got gypped, or they didn't get their money's worth, or 3 lakhs, or whatever. So it's almost like a drama. It says when Bhaktivinoda Thakur is acting as a magistrate and a judge, as soon as he would hear the case, within a minute or so, he would make his judgment. But if he would just close all the cases in 1 minute, then the people would feel that the convicts or criminals would think they're, or the people that were in his court, were thinking they weren't getting, they would criticize, we're not getting a fair hearing. Fair hearing means you have to hear, shravanam. Judge them, shravanam. The judge has to listen to the case. So the lawyers say, and the lawyers prepare these big briefs and all these big, called legal brief, and so many statements they have to defend their client, the defense. So if the lawyer comes in and the judge says, okay, what's the charges? Okay, guilty. And the lawyer will say, wait a minute, I got 100 pages I have to read. So then the judge says, yes, please state your evidence. Well, Friday night, 7 o'clock, did that. And then he turns page 2. And then 1929, there was a case, the state of California versus Mr. Smith was a similar case. In 1947, there was another case, and he starts reading all these case histories of different similar convicts who got convicted, were charged with the same crime, and they were released. And then on and on and on and on. And therefore, Your Honor, I submit my case. So please, you can see by all the evidence I've given that my client is innocent and not guilty as charged. So please release him from this charge. So that goes on for 20 or 30 minutes or an hour. And meanwhile, the judge is nodding and sleeping. Or maybe he's playing, maybe he has a deck of cards up there. He's playing solitaire or listening some on his iPod to some Prabhupada lectures or Prabhupada's vintage kirtans. Hari Haraya Namaha Krishna Madhavaya Namaha Yadavaya Madhavaya Keshavaya Namaha Gopala Govindaram Sri Madhusudan. Guilty! As charged. So Bhaktivinoda did the same thing. He would listen for a minute and he could suss it out by his ESP or by his super soul realization. This guy is guilty, but he would let the guy rattle on for a half hour or an hour or so. So Krishna is a judge, and the defendant here is Lord Brahma, and he's guilty. He's actually guilty. Are you a thief? What's the charges? The charges are stealing boys and calves, kidnapping. Brahma's been slapped. He's been arrested. He's been arrested and charged with kidnapping and holding against their will. He's kept children locked up for 1 year without their mothers and fathers. It doesn't say anything about he was feeding them Rasgullas and stuff. Maybe he wasn't feeding them either. 1 year they were locked up, and the calves were denied their mothers. But who is feeding the cow? Who is feeding the calves and boys that were locked up for 1 year of Krishna's time by Brahma? But I want you to understand the severity of the offense. This is a crime, and it is, in one sense, all these prayers are like his defense, and Krishna's the judge, and the judge has to give a hearing. He's appealing his case. On one level, it sounds like a legal case. The court is Vrindavan, the judge is Krishna, the defendant is Brahma. Has he done something wrong? Yes. He's committed thievery. He's not ordinary thievery. No, kidnapping. This is what they call kidnapping. He's holding kids for ransom. He holds some sons of some rich guy and has to get some money. He kidnapped Krishna's best boyfriends, kidnapped his favorite Gopal and Govinda's favorite calves, and held them for 1 year against their will. So Krishna is really not too happy with this. So meanwhile, he's stating his defense in the form of these beautiful stutis and prayers, which are philosophically perfect and full of sambandha gyan and all the things I mentioned. But another level, what's going on in the personal level between Brahma and Krishna? Our level, we're trying to understand the philosophy, and there's the Adiyatmika level, Adidaivika, and Adibhautika level of the verses. What is it their level, the people in the verses, and what is the elements of the story and the situation, the bhautika, the elements, and Adiyatmika, how does it apply to me? What are the teachings and relevance for me? So it's nice to go in and out of these different viewpoints. What's going on with Krishna's devotees, and what's going on with me, and what's going on in the actual story and the situation, the time frame and the setting and the emotions and the rasas and the vibhavas and vyavachari bhavas, and what is the mukhya rasa, and what is the sthayi bhava, and what are the auxiliary rasas? Is this interaction between Krishna's devotee? He's a devotee, Brahma's a devotee. Is this interaction a madhurya bhava? Is this parakiya bhava or swakiya bhava? No. Is this sakya bhava? No. Is this dasya bhava of some sort? And the shant is like shanta or dasya. So it's very passive. There's not much service, rather it's disservice, pratikul. Was against the satisfaction in favor of Krishna, so it's not favorable. Anokalyasya sankapa. What is the definition of pure devotion? Anyabhi lashita shunyam jnana karmadya navritam. Anokalyasya Krishna anushinam bhaktiruttama. So is this Krishna anukulya? Is this favorable to Krishna's lunch pastimes? He rip off all his playmates and his calves? Very pratikul, unfavorable. So this is not pure bhakti. So Krishna's listening, and 14 verses have gone by, and we don't hear any response. Oh, I forgive you. It's all right, yes. That's right, I'm like your mother. Oh, yes, you're in my universe, and I'm like Narayan, and you're in my garba, and oh, I'm like your mother. Yes, you took birth from me. Yeah, I mean, oh, it's okay. And Krishna pats him on the back. I forgive you. It's okay, you still... Krishna's silent, not saying anything. And as you know, in modern emotional dealings, the silent treatment is the most devastating. Well, say something. Just speak to me. Say something. What are you thinking? Even between friends, if suddenly a friend, a boyfriend or two men doesn't talk anymore. Well, to speak of husbands and wives, this is an old trick. Usually the wife does it. Does this silent treatment. What's wrong? Nothing. She says anything, she's nothing. And it goes on for 2 days. You say, wait a minute, nothing is really something. So Krishna is using silent treatment on Brahma. And Brahma's like getting a little nervous. So let me try this. You know, you're really big and I'm really small and you have so many powers and I have none. And millions of universes emanate from you. And then Brahma says that and watches. Well, let's see. This didn't do anything. Didn't seem to work. Okay, listen. You're Mahavishnu and thousands of universes come out of your pores and I'm just in one of those universes, just one little pot-like universe. Oh, wait a minute. There's no response here. He's still standing there looking the other way. He's giving me the silent treatment. He's not even saying hmm or haji or ji. He's not giving an Indian ji. Mara, Brahma ji. Jiha. Haji. Ha. Nothing. Silence. Absolute silence. Well, let me try another. Listen, you're like Arvadakshay Vishnu. You're my mother. Be nice. Silence. So Vishnath says in his commentary, anticipating that Krishna might say, now this, so now, entering that Leela by the power of his Bhavdrishti and Bhavdrishti, he's seeing that Leela and his Leela, inner Leela pervasion. He's understanding the mentality of Krishna and the mentality of Brahma. Anticipating that Krishna might reply to his prayer and say this particular, it is, so anticipating that Krishna might say, and now Vishnath in his purport is telling us what Krishna might reply, because we haven't heard any reply. 14 verses have passed by and Brahma's tuti, and Brahma's, it's been a one-sided conversation. Brahma, 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 Brahma. So if you were seeing this in a movie, the camera's on Brahma and he says his prayer. Then any good movie, then the camera will, then I'll switch, the next scene will be to the listener. And does the listener have a deadpan look on his face, or does he have a smile? Does he have a frown? Does he look? He's looking this way or that way. Is he showing? Looking at the ground? Is he twiddling his fingers? Is he drawing pictures on the ground with his toenails? Is he splitting a piece of grass in half, or is he just chewing bubble gum, or blowing bubbles on his chewing gum, bubble gum? You know, what's he doing? Oh no, he's playing with a yo-yo. You know, he's juggling three amalaki fruits. And what's Krishna doing? We want to see. It's a movie. He's sitting down. He's lying on the ground sleeping. And Brahma can't say, "Stand up! I'm talking to you." Yes, well, I guess he's pretty bored. After 10 prayers, he got so bored. Krishna lied down on the, put his head on the leg of a coward boy, went to sleep. But anyway, Brahma's thinking, "I have to get these prayers off my chest, and I have to give this statement. I have to say these things. They've been on my mind for a whole year, of Krishna's time. I've been thinking about and contemplating what to say to get forgiven. Now I've got my act together. I'm ready to give my talk." So anticipating that Krishna might say, "It is true that you are the son of Narayan, Brahma, but then who am I, O Brahma?" Brahma answers in this verse, are you not that Narayan? Are you not the supreme controller of everything? The Bhagavad Gita states, "I pervade everything by one fragment of my energy." Now that long-awaited response, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, that dialogue, give and take, like I say something, then you should respond. So now, Vishnath, in his commentary in verse 14, shows us a dialogue. Krishna said this, and then he said, "Oh yes, all right, Brahma, you just told me that I'm Narayan, and then you're born from Narayan, you're the son of Narayan. But then who am I, O Brahma?" Then he says, "Well, you're Narayan, you're controlling everything." And Brahma says, "As the super soul of all living entities, you see and observe all the action of everyone. And Narayan is merely a portion of you." And Krishna says, now Krishna replies, Vishnu tells us, "But I am called Krishna because I am dark in color and I live in Vrindavan. Vishnu is called Narayan because he lies in the water. How can I be Narayan?" He said, who are you talking about? I'd be Krishna. I'd be this black boy from Vrindavan. Who is this Narayan? He's lying on the water, floating around in yoga nidra, someone squeezing his toes. I'm Krishna. I'm in Vrindavan. He's up there. Hey, come on, get serious. What are you talking all this funny talk? Narayan, Garbhadakshay, Vishnu, the pot-like universe. I'm right here. I'm be here. What are you? You're talking some highfalutin stuff. I don't know what you're talking about. Look, do you see me? Look, I'm Shyam. I'm black in color. I'm in Vrindavan. Get serious, Brahma. Then Brahma replies, the word Nara means water, but it also means living entity, and Ayan means shelter. The Lord who dwells in the water is one of your expansions, my dear Lord Krishna. Therefore, I have appeared in your womb. Just as the Vasudeva form and your youthful form as Krishna are spiritual, not material. So this form of Narayana is also spiritual, existing at all times and places in the state of Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness, beyond the touch of matter. Your forms, such as Matsya, are also the same category. So again, Brahma is on the same beat, he's on the same line of thought, speaking so much philosophy, and Krishna says, well, wait a minute, you're saying all these things, I'm just Krishna and Vrindavan. Who's this Narayan? And I don't know. You're the son of Narayan, not me. I'm just Krishna, Vrindavan. So Vishnu gives us Brahma is just flying high in the sky in the ionosphere in his supersonic philosophical jet, and Krishna up there somewhere in the planetary systems throwing out all these shlokas about the universal vibhutis and powers and creative aspects of Krishna as Narayan. And Krishna is listening to it all. And finally, in the 14th verse, Vishwanath hasn't given any reply so far. So it appears, at least from the eyes of Vishwanath, if we can take this indication, 13 verses have passed by and Krishna is passively or disinterestedly or boringly listening. Now in the 14th verse, at least this is the first time in Vishnu's Tika that he's venturing to offer a dialogue by saying, well, now Krishna's going to speak a little bit because he's thinking, listen, how much is this guy going to say? The Narayan and Vibhutis and all these Mahatattva and Pradhan and Mahavishnu and Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Wait, this is enough. 13 verses, 13 shlokas, you've filled my ears with all these things about Aishwarya Tattva Gyan and Aishwarya, all these opulences and vibhutis and virata rupam and all this stuff. I said, wait, who am I? Oh, Brahma. I said, you're Narayan. Because Krishna is listening to all these things, because Brahma is saying, you're Narayan. He said, well, wait a minute, who am I? Are you sure what you're talking about? No, you're that Narayan. And the Bhagavad Gita, you pervade everything. You're the super soul. And he's still, Brahma's not seeing who he is still. He's thinking and then Krishna simply says, okay, you're saying I'm Garbhadakshay Vishnu is a plenary portion of mine. You're saying Mahavishnu. You're saying all the creator, all these things. But listen, you want to know who I am? If you want to know who I am, ask me. So now, I'm Krishna. I'm black. I live in Vrindavan. And this Vishnu, and I live in Vrindavan, in the terra firma of Vrindavan, Dwadasavan, Chirasi Kosh Vrindavan. I'm walking on the land. I'm walking on Govardhan. I'm walking in the valleys of Kamyavan and Bahulavan and Kokilavan and Vrindavan and then the Sevakos and Nidiban and Dir Shamir and Yamuna Palin and Rasastali. I'm a land man. My feet are barefoot and I'm walking behind the cows on the land and I'm dancing with the gopis on the land and I'm climbing the trees on the land. I'm swimming in the river on the land and I'm sleeping on the land and picking fruits from the land. And Krishna says, this is me. But you say, "What? This Vishnu, you keep talking about this Narayan and Vishnu and all this. He's lying in the water somewhere. How can I be that Narayan? Krishna's a practical man. He's using common sense. He says, you see me? Look. Hello, Brahma, look. You have 8 eyes and 4 heads. You're standing here in Vrindavan with me. Do you see me? Look. Am I blue? Oh, yeah. Am I standing on the land? Vrindavan? Brajabhumi Vrindavan Dhamma ki. But Brahma, still he can't see Krishna. He was bewildered a year before, which was a few moments of his time. He was bewildered a year before in Bimohan. And now he's so-called realized everything, and now he's offering his prayers, and he's still bewildered. Even in the course of offering his prayers, he's still bewildered. He said, "You're in the Narayan. Hey, wait. Who are you talking about?" At that time, Narayan, the plenary portion of Krishna, lies down in the water, and gradually a lotus stem grows from his navel, and from that lotus flower, Brahma is born, naturally concluded that the mother of Brahma is Narayan, because the Lord is the resting place of all living entities. After the dissolution of the universe, he is called Narayan. The word Nara means the aggregate total of all living entities, and Ayan means the resting place. The form of Garbhadakshay Vishnu is called Narayan because he rests himself on that water, the Garbhadak ocean. In addition, he is the resting place of all living creatures. Besides that, Narayan is also present in everyone's heart, as confirmed in Gita. In that sense, he is Narayan, as Ayana means the source of knowledge as well as the resting place. Gita confirms that remembrance of the living entity is due to the presence of Supersoul within the heart. After changing the body, a living creature forgets everything of his past life, but because Narayan, the Supersoul, is present within his heart, the living entity is reminded by the Supersoul to act according to his past desires. Brahma wanted to prove that Krishna is the original Narayan, that he is the source of Narayan, and that Narayan is not an exhibition of the external energy Maya, but an expansion of spiritual energy. The activities of the external energy or Maya are exhibited after the creation of this cosmic world, and the original spiritual energy of Narayan was acting before creation. The expansions of Narayan from Krishna to Karana Dakshayi Vishnu, from Karano Dakshayi Vishnu to Garbo Dakshayi Vishnu, and from Garbo Dakshayi Vishnu to Shiro Dakshayi Vishnu, and from Shiro Dakshayi Vishnu to everyone's heart are manifestations of Krishna's spiritual energy. So just see how Krishna is expanding. From Krishna to Mahavishnu, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshayi, Shiro, Shiro Dakshayi into our hearts. These forms of Vishnu, who are expansions of Krishna, are not conducted by the material energy. Therefore, these Vishnu forms are not temporary. Anything conducted by the material energy is temporary, but everything executed by the spiritual energy is eternal. Brahma here reconfirms his statement that establishing Krishna as the original Narayan. Brahma said that the gigantic universal body is still resting on the water of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And that's verse 14. It's nice how Vishwanath has kind of opened up he's introduced the presence of Krishna, because it seemed that he was in the background for the last 13 verses, but he's interacting. When you're having a conversation, or even when someone's offering prayers, the person can stop and say, "Wait a minute, You're off the mark here. Your prayer is not correct." So he's saying like this. So now this brings us to text 15. We're covering a few verses today. Chejalastam tavasaj jagat vapu vapu kime nadrishtam bhagavam stadeva. Kim vasudrishtam ridimeta deva kim no sapadyeva punarvyadarshi. Brahma continues, "My dear Lord Purushottam Sri Krishna, if your transcendental body, which shelters the entire universe, is actually lying upon the water, then why were you not seen by me when I searched for you in the beginning of creation? And why, though I could not envision you properly within my heart, did you then suddenly reveal yourself?" So this is now Brahma speaking about a long time ago, in this dawn of creation. Of course, purport here, BBT, says that Brahma took birth on the seat of a giant lotus which emanated from the navel of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. At that time, as you know, everything was dark in every direction. He was bewildered about where he was and his function, identity. And therefore he tried to trace out the source of the lotus stem, searching for clear information. So this is the journey of the pilgrim, a pilgrim's journey. Lord Brahma, like every jiva, he's also a jiva. He's a living entity. We're also jivas. And we're born in darkness. He was born literally in darkness. Not only was it dark, the universe is dark. Well, actually, it wasn't dark. It was illuminated by the effulgence of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Garbhadakshay Vishnu is not dark. He's surrounded by a jyoti, Brahma jyoti. So Brahma was in the light, but it says he was darkness because tamagun, ignorance. He didn't know where he came from, what he was supposed to do, or who he was. So who's like that? Everybody in this material world. No one knows where they came from, who they are, what they're really supposed to do. Because this planet Earth is a place of karma and avidya. Everyone's simply busy, engaged in karma, acting, moving, running, and removing ignorance in order to exist. At every moment, ignorance is threatening to cover us and obliterate us and annihilate us. So the whole, everywhere, education. Struggle for existence means a struggle to learn. A struggle to learn, a struggle to acquire knowledge, facility, ability, qualification, and without it one perishes. So Brahma was in a dilemma at the time of his appearance, and any sensible, intelligent human being will realize he's also in a dilemma like Brahma. So then he'll search and finally he'll say, oh, what to do? And he'll throw his hands up in the air and say, oh God, only you can help me. I'm trapped in this world of karma and avidya. I'm just rotating this karma chakra like a stupid mouse in a gerbil in a pet shop. A gerbil or a mouse in a pet shop running around a little metal wheel, engaged in a cycle, pushed by the time factor and running in the cycle of karma. Karma chakra and the kala chakra. Kala chakra is spinning my life and I'm running in the larger circle of the kala chakra, the karma chakra. All in the context of birth and death. So he's bewildered, so he tried to trace out the searching for clear information, search for self-discovery, the journey of self-discovery, the search of self-realization, the journey back home. Unable to find the personality of Godhead, he returned to his seat and engaged in severe austerities, having been ordered to do so by the transcendental voice of the Lord, who could not be heard or seen. After long meditation, Brahma saw the Lord, but then again lost sight of him. Thus Brahma concludes that the transcendental body, the personality of God, it is not material, but rather an eternal spiritual form, endowed with inconceivable mystic potencies. In other words, Brahma should not have challenged the personality of God, the Lord of all mystic power. That was a bad move. If you're one day in a kung fu school and you challenge Bruce Lee, it's not a very good idea. Okay, Bruce, come on, let's fight. Are you sure? Yes, I've gone to I went to so-and-so's kung fu school for 2 days. I'm ready to take you on. All right. Won't be a very long fight, no doubt about that. So Brahma tried to take on Krishna, but he lost severely. It wasn't a very long bout. That was verse 15 now, the Vishnu Chakravarti's commentary. Brahma thinks, is it possible that this spiritual form arises from material water? It is not that the unlimited Lord Narayan can exist in the unlimited waters of the Garbhadak. Brahma said, my dear Lord Krishna, if your transcendental body is actually situated upon the water, then why couldn't I see you even after searching for a long time in the lotus stem? You may answer that you were there, but that I could not see you. But then how could I suddenly see you through meditation and then lose sight of you again? Though you are lying on the water and seem to be localized, and therefore limited, you hold all the universes within you and are therefore unlimited. You exist at all times and all places, and by the covering of your Yogamaya potency, you are sometimes visible and sometimes invisible. Many devotees, including the gopis, they worship Yogamaya. 5,000 years ago, the sadhana siddha gopis, who had not yet had the opportunity to see Krishna, they're living on the planet of Krishna during the time of Krishna's lila, and their lifetimes and lifetimes of sadhana and the rag on the path of rag marg, gopi anugatya, they finally attained their siddhadeyas, perfect spiritual bodies as gopis, born from the womb of gopis in Boma Vrindavan, and they grew up in that land of Vrindavan, and they were hankering to have Krishna's association intimately in Gopi Bhav, described in 10th canto of Bhagavatam, but they hadn't yet, not yet attained it. So they went to Radharani, they said, how can we attain Krishna's association? How, this is the our sankalpa, since thousands of lifetimes we're doing, or so many lifetimes, doesn't say, but many lifetimes, many hundreds of years. Sages, they were from Treta Yuga. Sadhana Siddha Gopis were the Dandakaranya sages who had met Ram and became benedicted by him, and started to follow the path of Rag Marg and Gopi Bhav, cultivating Gopi Bhav. And the Treta Yuga people live a long time, 10,000 years. And finally, it doesn't say how long they practiced, but they took birth in the material universe where Krishna's pastimes are going on. Of course, that's Dwapara Yuga. And then they went to Radharani, said, what can we do? And in Garga Samhita, she said, you should observe Ekadasi. By the power of Ekadasi, you might get the darshan of Krishna and fulfill your desire to dance with Krishna, rasa dancing, Gopi Bhav, Madhurya Bhav. And then, while they were here in Krishna's Leela, which is also Boma Vrindavan, Brajabhumi Vrindavan, Dama Ki Jai. Jai Jai Radhe, Jai Jai Sham, Jai Jai Shri Vrindavan Dham. Jai Jai Radhe, Jai Jai Sham, Jai Jai Shri Vrindavan Dham. Jai Jai Radhe, Jai Jai Sham, Jai Jai Shri Vrindavan Dham. Radhe, Jai Jai Sham, Jai Jai Shri Vrindavan Dham. Pavana Radhe Tero Nam, Pavana Shri Vrindavan Dham. Pavana Radhe Tero Nam, Pavana Shri Vrindavan Dham. Pavana Shama, Pavana Sham, Pavana Shri Vrindavan Dham. Pavana Shama, Pavana Sham, Pavana Shri Vrindavan. Vrindavan Vihari Lala Ki Jai, Radha Rani Ki Jai, Giriyaj Dharana Ki Jai, Jai Jai Shri Radhe. So then they were advised that they should, Purnamasi advised these sadhana siddha gopis, you should worship Katyayani on Mrigashirsha month. After Karti comes Mrigashirsh. Mrigashirsh is Krishna's month. Radharani is Kartiki Devi, Kartiki Devata. She is the Devi of Kartik month. So if you worship the goddess of that month or the god of that month, then by doing austerities or niyamas, niyamas, and so many vratas and vows and sankalpas, then to please that Devi or Dev, then if they're pleased, then they'll give you their benediction. And fulfill your sankalpa, your wish, your aspiration. The many of us, of course, in Kartik, we worship Radharani to get her eternal service, to get her mercy, to get her. We don't want her mercy for anything else. We want her. We want her eternal service. We want her eternal association. We want her eternal mercy. We want a sidelong glance. Anything, connect any type of distant connection with Radharani and Radhadasyam, that is our heart's aspiration and our Nitya Sankalpa. No other aspiration, Nitya Sankalpa. Now the gopis of Boma Vrindavan, the Sadhana Siddha gopis, they didn't worship during Kartik that I worship during Mriga Shirsha. Why? Because Krishna says in Gita, Mriga Shirsha Masaham, among the 12 months of the year, I am Mriga Shirsha. I am November, December. This is my vibhuti. This represents me. Among fishes, I am the shark. Among purifiers, I am the wind. All these vibhutis are there. So of all the 12 months, the month that Krishna can be had, Bhagavan Purushottam Sri Krishna, he can be pleased in this month. So these gopis, they worshipped Katyayini, which was Yogamaya, not Mahamaya, Yogamaya. With the what? With the sankalpa to see Krishna and to attain Krishna as their husband. Katyayini Mahamaya Mahayogya Nirishvari Nandagopam Sutam Devi Patim Me Kurute Namaha. Their prayer is there, that shloka is there in the Bhagavatam, in the Katyayini chapter. They performed the pratya for 1 month and they were praying Katyayini Mahamaya. Oh Mahamaya, oh Katyayini. Mahamaya means Yogamaya. Katyayini Mahamaya. Mahayogini Adishwari. You are Mahayogini Adishwari. Adishwari. You are the Adi-ishwari. Supreme Goddess of power and controller. Nanda Gopa Gopam Sutam Devi. Oh, Nanda Gop Sutta. Nanda Gop Sutta. Devi. Nanda Gop Sutam Devi. Please give us the son of the king of... please... Patim me kurute namaha. May the son of Nanda Maharaj become our pati, become our husband. So they worship Yogamaya to attain Krishna and have his darshan and his eternal intimate service in Madhuriya Bhav, Gopi Bhav. So many devotees at that time and since then, they have many devotees in Gaudiya Sampradaya that receive a Yogamaya mantra, Purnamasi mantra, and they worship Purnamasi or Yogamaya to enter the Leela and attain their connection. Yoga means connection. Because Mahamaya is that energy, that potency, that potency which separates us from Krishna, makes us forget Krishna. And Yogamaya is that potency which links us and joins us with Krishna, makes us remember Krishna, and helps us enter into our eternal service position with Krishna. So Brahma's praying here that you hold the unlimited universes within you and are therefore unlimited. You exist at all times and all places, but by the covering of your Yogamaya potency, you are sometimes visible and sometimes invisible. This is Vishnu's commentary in 15. You can read Prabhupada's commentary in 15 from the Krishna book. Krishna, this gigantic body of the universe is another manifestation of your energy. On account of Narayan's resting on the water, this universal form is also Narayan. And we're all within the womb of this Narayan form. I see your different Narayan forms everywhere. I can see you on the water. I can feel you within my heart. And I also see you before me now. You are the original Narayan. This is basically the verse. Prabhupada repeats the verse. 16. Atreva maya damanavatare yas Yasya prapanchasya bahi sputasya Krishnasya chantar jatare jananya maya tameva prakati kritante. Brahma continues, my dear Lord Purushottam Sri Krishna, in this incarnation you have proved that you are the supreme controller of maya. Although you are now within this universe, the whole universal creation within your transcendental body, a fact you demonstrated by exhibiting the universe within your abdomen before your mother, Yashoda. Lord Brahma here describes the inconceivable spiritual potency of the Lord. The whole creation is within your transcendental body. This fact you demonstrated by exhibiting the universe within your abdomen before your mother Yashoda. So now he's getting, when the Krishna said in Vishnu's dialogue that I'm Krishna, I live in Vrindavan, now Brahma's getting the idea. He's starting to talk about Vrindavan, Yashoda. Brahma here describes the inconceivable spiritual potency of the Lord. We may find a pot within a house, but we can hardly expect to find a house within the same pot. By Krishna's spiritual power, he can appear within the universe and simultaneously show all the universes in his body. One may argue that since the universe is seen by Mother Yashoda within Krishna's abdomen, within the Lord's body, they are different from the illusory material universes manifest externally. Brahma refutes that argument, however, saying that Krishna is Maya Damana, the supreme control of illusion. By the Lord's own supreme mystic potency can bewilder even illusion herself. And thus the Lord actually exhibited all the material universes within his body. This is Mayatam, the supreme bewildering potency of Lord, of the personality of Godhead. At least now he's getting closer to the point. He's coming to Vrindavan. Although, says Johnny, to your mother you showed this thing. Vishnu says, it seems like a contradiction to say that Narayan, who lies in the water of the universe, holds the universe within his abdomen. One may find a pot within the house, but one can hardly expect to find a house within the same pot. Sounds similar. That was Vishnu's commentary. One may argue that the spiritual body Narayan holds an illusory universe within it and is situated within another real universe. But if that is so, then Brahma himself cannot really be situated in the Lord's abdomen. In order to establish the oneness of the universe within the Lord, and that outside the Lord, Brahma speaks this verse. O supreme controller of illusion, said Brahma, to show that the external universe also exists within your abdomen, you produced an illusion for Mother Yashoda. By the influence of your Yogamaya potency, you appeared within this universe and simultaneously exhibited all the universes within your body. Similarly, though I am within your abdomen, I arose from your abdomen and am situated here. Thus, you are still my mother. So this is the point. Jayani Tayanand Prabhupada's commentary, whatever he says on 16. Krishna book. My dear Lord, said Brahma, in this incarnation you have proved that you are the supreme controller of Maya. You remain within the cosmic manifestation, yet the whole creation is within you. This fact has already been proved by you when you exhibit the universal creation within your mouth before your mother Yashoda. By your inconceivable potency of Yoga Maya, you can make such things effective without external help. So these, basically, Vishwanath and Prabhupada and VVT and Brahma are all saying basically the same thing in verse 16. That Krishna and Vrindavan is the wielder of unlimited Yoga Maya potency. And Brahma is trying to convince everybody of this fact, that this potency is one of Krishna's potencies in Vrindavan, and trying to teach everyone that Krishna is the supreme. He's beyond, he's the source of all the Narayan forms, and he's so powerful, and is just in all this, all everything that Brahma's been saying about Krishna's expansion, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu and Shiradakshaya and all these universes. He's compressing it in this verse and saying, everything I've said about all these universes and all these forms of Vishnu, etc., and Narayan, you showed that all in your mouth. In Vrindavan, that was just, you had that whole thing inside the back of your mouth when Mother Yashoda saw at Brahmandagat, when everyone said you ate clay, and Mother Yashoda ran from her house in Gokul to see whether, in fact, had you eaten clay or her ladus. Did you set her ladus down and gave them to the monkeys and ate clay balls instead? Is this true or not? So by this, by reminding Krishna of this leela, Brahma is saying that this leela, you prove that you're beyond all these Vishnu forms. That's when I'm realizing that you are not only the source of all these Vishnu forms, but this whole thing, everything I talk about, Mahavishnu and millions of universes emanating from the pores of his body, and then so many Garbhadakshaya Vishnus enter there, then Shiradakshaya Vishnu. That's when you yawn, that's all in your mouth, Krishna. The Vrindavan Krishna. This is another point to establish that Krishna Vrindavan is the supreme Purushottam, not the Aishwarya Purushottam Vishnu, or not the Maryada Purushottam Ram, but the Madhurya Purushottam Krishna in Vrindavan is the supreme form. So apparently this is continuing with, this was verse, we just completed verse 16. It seems to continue to glorify the Vibhuti. I would say that all these verses describe the Lord Brahma glorifies the inconceivable abhyams of Lord Krishna, the Achintya Vibhuti.